Welcome to Sunday's Here with Kevin Clark. I'm Kevin Clark.
Yeah.
Richie, they named a guy from Philly Superman and Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane. So they didn't even tell me I didn't get it for the Superman thing.
Next time.
I emailed. You know? Just put some feelers out, you know? All right, Albert Breer is here. We basically gossiped throughout the league. Went through upcoming quarterback contracts, a couple of movement things we might be watching in the next couple of months, storylines, tanking, all that stuff. I really enjoyed this conversation. I also got the Ohio State graduate on edge with Buckeye jokes. So here you go, Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated. Take it away.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
All right, Albert Breer is here. He has a lot to answer for. Ohio State's quarterback was given a car by something called Mark Wahlberg Chevrolet in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, I don't think, as far as I know, that's not the Mark Wahlberg, which is really weird and confusing.
What?
First of all, like, I'm from the same place that Mark Wahlberg's from, roughly. I'm from Boston area, and like, there's no Mark Wahlberg Chevrolet up here, so why the hell would there be one in Columbus, Ohio? But yes, a guy who's not even the starting quarterback yet got a $125,000 car, which I view, and I think you can relate with this, as a very positive development as far as our ability to continue to get good players.
I think that one thing, and this is just broadly speaking, I have no idea. Obviously didn't know who Mark Wahlberg was, this Mark Wahlberg, until 5 minutes ago. Broadly speaking, people who were giving money and cars to athletes now, we're doing so 5 years ago. They just can't post on Facebook that they did it in the old era. Now
right.
They can.
Well, now it's an ad for the car dealership. Before it was just
a charitable donation to the athletic
department.
That's exactly right. In-kind donation. All right. So we're not going to sit here discussing the fact that there's a Seinfeld John Voight situation with a guy named Mark Wahlberg in Columbus. We're going to go through NFL storylines. Albert, you wrote this week that about the storylines that are going to dominate the, 1 month to go, the 4 weeks to go until training camp. We'll start with this,
yep.
Quarterback contracts, because I think the Jalen Hurts contract was obviously one domino to fall because Lamar Jackson fell right after that. But then you're getting into Burrow and you're getting into Justin Herbert. And I feel like that could be a different stratosphere. We've seen the preparation from Cincinnati as far as selling the naming rights. They've never really done this. They didn't have a quarterback capable of it. The Andy Dalton thing was a bit of a year-to-year kind of...
By the way, that was a point of contention with a lot of other owners, too. You know that, right? Like, that what? A lot of other owners resented the Bengals for not... Well, because, like, a lot of other owners resented the Bengals in the past because
right.
they would cry poor on certain things, right. and yet the founder's name is on the stadium, and there's not, you know, some corporate sponsor on the stadium.
I believe Jerry Jones offered to buy the naming rights, if I'm not mistaken. Is that an apocryphal story?
That might be right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe Jerry. Fantastic.
I believe there was a bullying
Dallas Cowboys Stadium in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I believe there was a bullying session of Mike Brown in the last decade, let's call it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it didn't work until now. Joe Burrow was a culture changer in the business department of the Bengals business department. Okay, so let's start there. The quarterback market can jump how high when Burrow and Herbert go? And is Herbert waiting for Burrow?
Yeah, I think Herbert probably goes first, if I had to guess. And the Chargers deliberately waited. The Chargers waited, and they had to come to an agreement with Herbert's camp. We're going to pick this up after the draft, which, I mean, if you're going to be skeptical about it, you could say the owners wanted to keep the money in their pockets for the extra few months, which sometimes happens, you know. Mm-hmm. But the Herbert camp was amenable to that because obviously they felt like another domino would fall before their deal got done, and that happened with Jalen Hurts' deal getting done. So, you know, I think the Herbert deal probably gets done first. And I think like one or the other, both probably get to $55 million. You know, I think the question is, how creative are you? And I think there's going to be some give and take in both. And I think, you know, one of the things that I know Joe Burrow is going to be cognizant of is, what does this mean for Ja'Marr Chase? What does this mean for T. Higgins? Because he genuinely wants to keep the team together the same way Tom Brady looked at his contract negotiation 20 years ago. Like, how do we keep this core of players together while I'm still getting mine? And so there are different ways to do that. How much of the contract is guaranteed? How is it structured? How quickly is the cash getting to me? So, like, there are ways, I think, that they can keep the gross number down. And obviously, in both cases, you have 2 years to fold into it because there are 2 years left on each guy's rookie deal. But I think at least in the case of Burrow, he's sort of looking at it like Brady looked at it, like Mahomes looked at it, which is like, how can I get mine while helping keep the team together? And Herbert, I think, is more probably in the Hurts bucket, where I think he wants to help keep the team together. But a lot of that team's already signed. You know what I mean? Like, where you don't have like a T. Higgins or a Ja'Marr Chase or a Logan Wilson or one of those guys up. Like, a lot of those guys that he's been playing with the last few years are already locked up long term.
I'm fascinated by the Eagles situation because I don't No, it is the most interesting collection of contracts in the league, I think, because you have a lot of veterans and then you have a lot of flyers, guys on 1 year deals, prove it deals. And then you obviously have the rookies. There are a lot of guys whose contracts have gone through enough restructures to where, like, that this is the final form of their contract. I heard Jason Fitzgerald say this the other day on this over the Cap podcast. Like, there's a lot of veterans who've been restructured like five times. And so it's an expensive top heavy roster, but it's invested in the places you want to be invested in. It's invested on the lines. It's invested in guys, you know, are going to have a very, very, very high floor. And so Hurts is contracted a different bucket. Is there a feeling around the league? And by the way, I just looked it up. It was 2006. I believe Jerry Jones offered to sell the naming rights for Mike Brown. Said he could double it. He said, if you sell it for $5 million, I can double that.
He wasn't going to buy him himself. He was just going to be kind of the broker.
It sounds like he offered him, from what I'm reading here, it sounds like he offered to buy the rights from him and then double whatever Mike Brown sold it to him for. That's what it seems like, but also
so it'd be sort of Brown, like what he did with Legends then.
Yes. Yeah. So this is amazing stuff from everybody involved. It's the problem here is that Mike Brown told a different version of the story than what came out in the Boston Globe within the piece I'm reading. So, well, I'm not sure what happened, except Jerry Jones was mad at Mike Brown for not selling the naming rights to the stadium. That's the long and the short of it. Okay. So is there a feeling in the league that the Bengals are going to operate differently because they have Joe Burrow? And I'll give you an example. Someone said this about the Chiefs, where there's two things about the Chiefs that I think are important to know. Number one is that one of Brett Veach's best qualities is making Clark Hunt a more aggressive owner, in the sense that he trades first round picks now. He goes, not go for broke, obviously, but he will say, hey, we have a chance to do this. Let's just go do it, where maybe he didn't do that a decade ago. And then the second part of it is, like, you know, Mahomes, you're just going to spend more, and you're just going to say, okay, we had the opportunity to have this little edge at training camp with this, or we have the opportunity to bring on this X quality control guy, whatever it is. Mahomes just makes you a different franchise. The Bengals and the Chiefs were vastly different franchises, but it just goes to show a franchise quarterback can take an owner places he's not comfortable going. Is there a sense that the Bengals are going to change as a franchise or not?
I think they sort of have to, you know, like, I mean, because I think this is a different landscape than it was 15 or 20 years ago. Like 15 or 20 years ago, you draft Peyton Manning first overall, you draft Michael Vick first overall. You have a pretty good idea. You're going to have that guy for 15 years. You know what I mean? Like, there weren't a lot of examples of guys going somewhere and then 5, 6, 7 years later deciding, I don't want to be here anymore, and kind of kicking and pushing their way out, you know? And now, like, after what's happened the last few years with Russell Wilson, with Tom Brady, with, with Aaron Rodgers, obviously, Deshaun Watson, you've seen more guys sort of taking control of their own situations. And it was funny. I can remember a couple of years ago, I was talking to, a guy high up with one of these teams. And he said to me, he's like, if I'm Clark Hunt, I'm at least once a month going out to lunch with Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
And being like, you okay, buddy? Like, everything all right? Like, just checking in? Like, you know, like, because I like, there is that feeling, like, if you let things erode around the quarterback, or he doesn't have a real say in what's going on, or at least he's not apprised of what's going on, like, he's not a stakeholder, well, you could be asking for trouble. And so I think the rules of engagement with these guys has really changed. Mm-hmm. And so if you're the Bengals, you know what Joe Burrow's goals are. Joe Burrow's goals are to be the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, you heard him. He said it himself. Like, our championship window is as long as I'm here. You know, My whole career is my championship window. And so if you don't show that you can operate at that level, it's not just like anymore where it was 20 years ago, where it's like, all right, grit your teeth and deal with it. You know, like Archie Manning had to deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, when he was on crappy teams his whole career, John Elway dealt with it with the Broncos forever and ever and ever until Mike Shanahan got there. Like, it's not like that anymore. And so all these teams have to consider the escape hatch that these guys might have down the line. And if you're the Bengals, you certainly have to consider that with Joe Burrow. Like, if you operate in a way that's going to piss him off in 3 or 4 years, you can't expect that he's just going to be around for that. You know, like, that now he has a way of separating himself from a bad situation.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back from a break that no listener heard because your son's had an internet problem, and also you had a Pokemon related delay earlier today. I have a lot to look forward to as far as fatherhood goes.
So my one kid is off to his summer baseball game. This, by the way, is, I had to come back from vacation for this. My other one has a birthday party today, so I'm at home with him. The birthday party is about an hour from now, and so his babysitter for the next little while we're doing this is his iPad. Well, unfortunately, the internet wasn't working on his iPad because he was signed into the wrong thing.
Oh, disaster.
And as parents of this generation know, the internet going out in your house is almost as if your house was on fire. That's how kids react to it now. I mean, I can't explain to them what it's like for us when we were kids, you know?
I will say this. I am going
when
to
your
raise
your mom would pick up the
Teddy.
Phone and you get kicked off the internet.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that. I'm going to raise Teddy in something similar to the M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village, where we're just going to go to the woods and we're going to pretend we're in the 1700s. And he will not have any tablets. I think that's
you're
the only
make
way
sure he doesn't
to keep
have any
him away.
Friend.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going deep into the woods.
The problem with that plan is he can't have any friends.
Yeah. I mean, we can just have another child and then the problem is solved and they don't have to watch Bluey or Paw Patrol. Okay. I don't know anything. Everybody keeps warning me about this stuff, about Bluey and Paw Patrol. I don't know anything about it. And the one day I'm going to know what they're going to talk about. Okay. And Cocomelon. Mm-hmm. We had a doctor the day. They're like, do not get them started on Cocomelon. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, guy. All right. Is
we
there a story?
That bullet.
Thank God. Is there a, I don't even know what it is, but thank God. Is there a storyline in general we should be more focused on in the league right now where, you know, I'll throw some out there, whether it's a QB moving on, whether it's a coaching opportunity. I mean, I don't think there's a Sean Payton-esque guy waiting out there. And I thought some of that stuff with Sean Payton this time last year was so fake. Like, oh, he's going to go to Dallas. Man, the thing I kept hearing over and over again is
Dallas for 10 years, though.
Well, not only that, the thing I kept hearing was that Sean Payton loved just not being involved at all with ownership in New Orleans, like not even telling anybody what's going on. And now all of a sudden he's going to be like, hey, Jerry, come watch film with me. Really? That was the move. So like all that stuff was always weird sort of chatter. But is there like a big picture, huge thing this time next year that we'll be talking about?
There are a couple. I mean, I think the one that like is really interesting to me is the college quarterbacks this year and kind of how Caleb Williams and Drake May, and they're on two different levels, to be clear. But both, I think, are worthy of being first overall picks. It's just that Caleb is sort of on a different level from everybody else and sort of, I think, is setting up to be on that Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, John Elway, Peyton Manning level as a prospect, right? And so how is that going to affect the NFL season? Well, I don't think anybody's going to be tanking out of the gate, but what happens when we get to the end of October and it's the trade deadline? And now you've got owners that are more analytically driven and they know what the value of getting that quarterback is and they're chasing that quarterback. And maybe they run a franchise that's been looking for that quarterback forever. Do we see like fire sales to end all fire sales towards the trade deadline because teams are offloading players in order to bottom out, get the first pick, build up draft capital, be able to build around that quarterback? I think there'll be some teams that are at least going to discuss that. So I think like the kind of Caleb Williams, Drake May dynamic hovering over the entire season. Oh, and by the way, the new Commanders owner actually ran the process in Philadelphia. You know what I mean? Like that, like I think play that I think is going to be something that we all are going to be talking about when we get closer to the trade deadline. The other one that I think just sort of feels like it slid under the radar a little bit, Kevin's Tua. And I mean, like at this time last year, we were all, and because this is a big picture thing when it comes to football in general, but you know, this time last year, we were talking about like, all right, they got Tyreek Hill, they've got Teron Armstead, stabilized their line, got the most explosive receiver group in the league. You've got, you know, Mike McDaniel coming in as a guy who's kind of their offensive guru. Now we're going to find out. And it feels like we got another incomplete, you know, and then they pick up the fifth year option. And like, we haven't talked a ton about the concussion issue. Like, is that going to be a topic going into week one? Like what happens the first time his head bounces off the turf? You know what I mean? Like, so I just feel like that's something that no one's talking about now that I think is going to be a big topic. And I think, by the way, it's one the league is cognizant of too. Because the Dolphins, a couple people kind of like said to me, like the Dolphins would be an interesting team to put in that kickoff slot. And then I just sort of thought about it. And I'm like, well, do they really want to put Miami in Kansas City and give like a week of oxygen to that storyline? You know, like everyone's talking about Dolphins, Chiefs, and what's the storyline? Well, what's the Today Show going to be talking about? What's Good Morning America going to be talking about? If they're talking about the NFL season, it's, oh, there's this quarterback who's going to be on the biggest stage in week one who has the concussion issue. So those would be the two things. Like we're very quarterback driven, I guess, in general, but the two college quarterbacks coming out and what it's going to mean for the back end of the NFL season, starting with the trade deadline. And then I think Tua's concussion issue is one that, I, you know, I like, I don't, we probably won't talk about it a ton, you know, in July and August, but I would think like when we get to week one, week two, week three, it becomes more of a discussion point.
Instead of today's show, we'll talk about Dan Campbell because the Lions are in that slot. Real quick. So Caleb Williams teams, I'm going to throw this out there. I have not asked Sean McVay or Les Snead about this. I was on paternity leave during the owners meetings in the combine, which is normally a place I would grab them, but I will recklessly speculate. Sean McVay comes back. They draft Stetson Bennett, which is the tankiest move I've ever seen in my entire life. We don't know what Matthew Stafford's elbow looks like. They're spending $180 million in cash this year. For reference, that is $120 million less than, say, the Buffalo Bills or the Philadelphia Eagles, but $100 million less than Philadelphia Eagles. There is not a lot of talent going forward on that roster. They obviously need to rebuild their draft capital. Sean McVay comes back after everybody thinks he's gone, retools his staff. Are we sure the plan is not to totally bottom out and get a top two pick? Or is Sean McVay so competitive? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it is now. Could it become that? I don't know. I mean, like, I think like this environment that we're all operating in, if they're not a good team at the end of October, like, again, like, I think that's going to be the inflection point is the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. These teams that are going to have valuable assets that they can trade off then, like, I think that sort of is going to serve as a crossroads for some of these teams. But I don't think this plan going in. Like, I don't think any team that employs Sean McVay
right.
on the contract that he's on with Matthew Stafford at quarterback, with Aaron Donald making what he's making, is planning on doing that. Now, that said, like, the margin for error in LA is thinner than it's been in a long time because, you know, I think there was a point this offseason where they were at the salary cap with like 40 guys on their roster, you mm-hmm. know? And, you know, I've talked to people there where they felt like this was the year they had to do it or else it was going to be a 2-year process. Like, if they kept mortgaging contracts and they kept pushing money forward and they kept kicking the can down the road, they felt like getting out from underneath this where they could have a clean cap was going to be a 2-year process. And we've seen in the past, like, normally they are 1 year. Like, the Bears got out of their mess in a year. The Falcons got out of their mess in a year. If you look at the Bills, 2018 was their yep. year where they kind of hit the reset button.
Dolphins.
Like, they really felt like, yeah, the Dolphins have done yeah. it. Like, so, like, the Rams really felt like they were at the point in, you know, coming out of last year and the way last year went, where it was like, if we don't do this now and we don't eat it now, like, take on all that dead money now, then this is going to be a 2-year process getting out of it. And we don't want to go through 2 down years because of it. So they're doing the 1 year this year. And of course, like, I think Sean McVay is too good a coach and that's too good an operation to really bottom out. But if they do bottom out, like, this is sort of the year they earmarked to be their reset year anyway.
I don't think it's in Sean McVay's DNA to intentionally lose games.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I do think that if the wheels fall off quickly, they're not going to go out of their way in December to win games. I don't know. I don't know Sean McVay all that well, but I just feel like they're just wired differently. Well, the two teams I'd circle for go ahead.
Here's the other thing. Like, we don't, with Matthew Stafford's elbow, we don't,
right.
I mean, I think it'll be okay. We don't know. Like, that's always tricky with a quarterback's elbow. Like, how many times have we gone through this before? Cam Newton's a great example, right? With the shoulder, mm-hmm. like throwing shoulder, elbow, that sort of thing. Like, we've seen it before where it's like, no, he's going to be okay. And like, everybody's optimistic and has the best laid plans. And because of what it means for the guy's moneymaker, mm-hmm. that can be a problem long-term. So we don't know yet on that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they think it's going to be fine, but we'll see.
Well, they also, the other thing about quarterback injuries, it's so crazy. I remember with Cam Newton, it was like, well, it's the shoulder plus a foot, and the foot, you know, you, all of a sudden then you can't drive and that hurts the shoulder. And it's like the way any NFL player works, their body, it's hard to predict. But also, I mean, just a quarterback, it's any one little thing. People, you know, I remember Chris Sims talking a couple of years ago about Mahomes, where it's like everyone says, oh, it's just a toe injury. No. Like, a toe injury can actually derail your season. Like, it is crazy how everything works together. The two teams I would circle.
The toe thing is funny because it's like, I think we all think that because it's just this little appendage.
Yes, exactly.
Try running around on a bad toe. Yep. You know what I mean? Like,
that's another thing everybody's warned about with fatherhood is you're like, you end up just slipping on things and breaking your toes a lot. I've had some dads be like, don't step on Legos. Veach told me a couple
Legos,
years ago.
It feels like somebody stabbed you in the foot. That's like, you will collapse when you step on one of your kids' Legos at some point. I promise you that.
Again, off to the woods. off to the woods, no Legos here. Veach told me a couple years ago that Mahomes' toe was so bad in the Super Bowl, they couldn't believe, the doctors couldn't believe he played. So there you go. So not only was he getting the crap knocked out of him, but he was in pain just walking around. So it sounds like a good time. The two teams I've circled are obviously Arizona and then Tampa Bay for Caleb Williams and Drake May. Yeah. And then the teams above it, I got to be honest with you. The teams above them, and the Texans are obviously out, but the teams above them have a chance to either do something or are just in position. Ron Rivera is in no position to tank. Sam Howell is in no position to tank. They got to save their jobs. Josh Harris could do something. You mentioned it about the process, but like Josh Harris could say, hey, why don't, you know, Ron, why don't you take a hike on September 23rd if he's trying to win too many games? So they really want to commit to that. But you know, a team I'm looking at Vegas over under wins total, and the Colts are right above the Bucks, or tied with the Bucks rather. Mm-hmm. The Colts might be good. I don't know. I mean, not 12 wins good, but they could do something. They have a good draft class. They have some talent that we've seen before. So like, I think it's going to be those two teams, Arizona and Tampa Bay, and then just some teams with season from hell type of years, where everybody gets injured and you kind of have to hit the hard reset button and you win two games. I think there's going to be an accidental team that gets a top two pick.
You hit on the right point there too. Like one of the things about tanking in the NFL, it's really rare to find a bad team that has a coach with job security. You know what I mean? Like there are way more like Lovie Smiths, you know, like out there where it's like Lovie Smith is going to go for two at the end in week 18 and screw up your entire thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so like, that's the problem is like, there just aren't like a great examples of teams that have coaches that are going to go out there and players too. Like that's the other part of it is like these players don't care what your plan is for 2 or 3 years from now. Like they don't know if they're going to have a job in January, you know? So they don't, there's no, like there's, it's really, really hard to play this sport, you know, while you're doing. Now that said, you can, again, manage your roster creatively. And that's why I'm saying, like, I think like this stuff is going to come up when we get to the trade deadline. Like mm-hmm. when we get half the season in the books, you know, could there be owners that get involved? You know, like, I think that that is a factor. We even saw it like Jimmy Haslam, like has done it. Like, you know, like we go back, you go back to like how they stripped the roster down and they put all that money into trying to find a quarterback. Like owners don't know a ton about football, but they are very quarterback focused. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Generally. And that's, you know, another piece of it, I think, is like that this idea of like that being out there and what it could mean for you, you know, and what it could mean for you could be like what Trevor Lawrence means to the Jaguars or what Joe Burrow means to the Bengals. Like if you're, I don't know, 1-7 at the trade deadline, you can see where the owner might decide to take a little walk downstairs to his football people with some instructions.
Yes. But also you mentioned the instructions, like the quarterback friendly part of it or quarterback focused part of it. Speaking of instructions, like I remember a GM telling me like the worst thing that happened was about a decade ago to rebuilding teams where every owner or like the owner's son or the owner's guy who's in town, the owner's not even coming into town, they would just say, well, what's our plan at quarterback? And if you didn't have one, your job was on the line. And so then you start going out and getting these stopgap options for $12 million and you accelerate the timeline. And like, I remember this happened after Kirk Cousins left in Washington, they go and get Alex Smith. And I remember, I love Alex Smith. I think he's one of the best analysts ever. I was in media right now. I think that he is, was a great quarterback in Kansas City, but you remove him from Andy Reid and he's up there in years, all that stuff. And you give him a ton of money that frankly could have just gone to Kirk and it would have ended up being better. And I said to someone high up there, I was like, what's happening here? And they said, oh, well, we just needed stability at the position. Stability doesn't mean anything if it's not a solution. And that to me has been the original sin for so many teams is like, oh, we have to have stability at the quarterback position. And so this is the opportunity to get it. Caleb Williams, Drake May. I want to ask you, since you talk to people, Drake May, if Caleb Williams is on that top tier, Drake May is on what tier? Like what are scouts saying about him? How big is that drop off?
I've heard the Justin Herbert comparison. Mm. I've heard a Joe Burrow comparison. Like the word I hear most with him is smooth. And that like, he may not be like off the charts at anything, but he's good at everything. And he's already kind of a grown up, you know what I mean? Because he comes from a family of athletes. Like his brother played basketball at Carolina. His dad was a quarterback there. like all of this is very, I hesitate to say Manning, but you know, like how like Peyton Manning and Eli Manning were like very prepared to be professional athletes, you know, like Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, very prepared to be professional athletes. Patrick Surtain, very prepared to be a professional athlete. Like Drake May has that, like where he already sort of is a pro, even though he's still in college. And so, like, I think you have like all of the pieces there, and he plays the game where he makes like things that are hard look easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't think he's in that stratosphere of, you know, again, like, and I think that like Caleb Williams stands to be the fifth guy in my lifetime who's in this category just as a prospect. John Elway, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence. Like, mm-hmm. I think that like Caleb Williams has a chance to be in that group as a prospect. I think Drake May is probably the next notch below, which means like plenty worthy of being the number one overall pick in most years, and probably won't be next year just because of the guy who's in front of him.
I want to get you angry for 1 second. Apparently Michigan has, according to Bruce Feldman, added a beat Georgia period to all of Michigan's football practices. They're obviously looking ahead. And then according during a recent trip with a Georgia linebacker for 2025, Montrez Walker, Jim Harbaugh gave the recruit a book called Everything Great About Ohio State with blank pages. Is this embarrassing for anybody?
Wow. How about that? Sounds like Jim's got a short memory. I mean, I don't know.
Between Ryan Day and Mark Wahlberg, they're cooking in Columbus right now.
I mean, he was 0-5 and 0-6 if you count the year that got canceled, the air quotes there, canceled the game. So, yeah, I mean, like it's been a tough couple of years, no question about it. I would be careful about counting your chickens before they've hatched. I just think that there's still a talent disparity there. Now, I'm not saying it's huge and it's closer than it has been, but there's still a talent disparity there, Kevin. And I think that you can usually see that talent disparity on the last Thursday in April. And I think that if you look back to the last April, at last Thursday in this, last Thursday in April, even this year, when things didn't go so well in the field, they still went a certain way there. And I think there's going to be, I think, you know, the same sort of thing will probably exist in 2024, which tells me there's the full capability there of things turning pretty quickly. So I just, you know, I mean, it was a pretty good 2 decades, and I've definitely had to wear the last 2 years, 2 decades versus 2 years. Like, let's just, you know, have some perspective here.
I will say a couple of things. Number one, Michigan is recruiting better, not better than Alabama, Ohio State, whatever, but better than they have been. The second thing is, yeah, I think they should install a beat TCU period before they install the beat Georgia period. I feel like we've gotten ahead of ourselves.
Would that just mean trying to avoid throwing pick sixes?
I mean, hey, you got to practice it. You know, it becomes a reality. You got to envision it before it becomes a reality of not throwing pick sixes. Is there a roster or a sleeper team the league is high on that we're not even on our radar?
Seattle. I think like coming out of last year, if you look at like the way that team was built, and look, I think like Geno like is obviously in the public's eye a huge variable, whether or not he's going to be able to duplicate what he did last year. But I like, is this not a little like where they were in 2011, 2012, right? Like where, like, wow, they've got a really good rookie class that just, I mean, both starting tackles, right? Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, you know, a couple starting corners and Kobe Bryant and obviously Tariq Woolen, a running back and Kenneth Walker, Boye Mafe, like the young promising like defensive lineman. You know, I look at that, and then they added two, I'd say, high floor first round picks in Devin Witherspoon and Jackson Smith and Jigba. And I just think like you look at like where like Pete Carroll's history of always having them competitive no matter what. And they haven't had a group of young players like this in a long time. And the last time they had a group of young players like this was when they were about to take off. And, you know, you look at the landscape of the NFC, it's like, why not the Seahawks, right? Now, you can argue over Geno, but, like, are the Seahawks in a worse position at quarterback than the Niners are? Probably not, right? Are the Seahawks in a worse position at quarterback than the Packers are? Probably not. Now, Jordan Love could wind up being a star. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But, the floor at quarterback looks higher for the Seahawks than it does for the Niners or Packers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I just sort of look at it, like, and I think a lot of people are ignoring Seattle and looking at last year as maybe a one-off and, like, well, you know, Geno played well that one year, but is he going to be able to follow it up? Like, I think there's a lot of promise on that team, and there's more talent on that roster than there's been, I think, since the end of, like, the Legion of Boom era.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, well, let's play a quick game of are they going to break out this year? We'll start with Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm. I think Justin's going to have a solid year. I don't think he's going to be spectacular, but I think, you know, between the coaching he's going to get, like, and I think Eberflus has been a really good, like, influence on setting up the program for him and being able to help him see it through the defense's eyes. I think Luke Getsy as his offensive coordinator is a really good developer at that position. And we've seen that over the years, and a really good at putting together a plan for his quarterback, which he did last year with Justin. And then, you know, you add Darnell Wright and DJ Moore. And it just feels to me like, I don't think they're going to be great, but I think Justin's going to come out of this year. And it's going to be like, all right, they probably should pick up the fifth year option. They probably should keep this going, because I think he's going to be too good for them to be in the running for Caleb Williams. So I'm going to say, mm-hmm. like, it's going to be a significant step forward as a passer. And I think that they're going to be a middling team, not a great team.
Kenny Pickett.
Sorry for fence sitting.
No, it's okay. Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I'm not sold that, like, I think he's going to, like, sort of be what he was last year. I think a lot is dependent on what happens at receiver with George Pickens and Deontay Johnson and, you know, even Pat Freiermuth at tight end. And, you know, they bring in Broderick Jones to play left tackle. There are a lot of moving pieces there. And so I think, you know, Tomlin's going to do what he did last year, which is build around and protect his quarterback, you know, and never ask too much of his quarterback and lean on Najee Harris. And so I think, like, you're going to see a similar version of Kenny Pickett to what you saw last year, which is going to make for an interesting discussion going forward, because, like, if the ceiling for Kenny Pickett is, say, like, he's Andy Dalton, is that a guy you re-sign after 3 or 4 years, you know? But I sort of think that that's where they are. Like, they're going to get good play out of him, but I don't think it's going to be much different than last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question of our time, right? Like, if you have to think about whether or not to resign a guy, should you ever resign him? I don't know. The quarterback market, the way it works, I don't know.
Can I give you one interesting point on that? Look at what Atlanta did. Look mm-hmm. at what Washington did. Look at what Tampa did, right? All those guys paired experienced veterans with, like young players that they have, that they have some belief in, but aren't completely sold on, right? It's Kyle Trask and Baker Mayfield in Tampa. It's obviously Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke in Atlanta, and then Sam Howell and Jacoby Brissett in Washington. Those teams have basically said, like, we're not going to pay $40 million for Derek Carr. That's implicitly what they're saying. It's like, unless we can get in the top quarter, we're better off treading water at the position, is basically what those three teams have told everybody. And I had one really smart executive say to me, he thinks, like, what's happening there is like what happened in the NBA, where there was a point where too many guys had max contracts and the market needed to mature. And there weren't that many players that were worth max contracts. That's sort of where the NFL is right now, like, where there wasn't really a second tier of quarterback contract, which made it really difficult to value Daniel Jones and Derek Carr this offseason and Jimmy Garoppolo too. And so if you have a Burrow or a Herbert, you just pay them. But, like, where is that second tier? You know, and a couple of teams, Atlanta, Washington, Tampa, again, have decided where that second tier landed this year was too much. And they were better off being economical at the position, trying to be really good elsewhere and waiting until the opportunity comes along to get a quarterback who has a chance to be in the top quarter of the league.
this is a different bucket. Does Mac Jones this year, last one, prove he's a long-term answer in New England?
No, I look at him as view similar to Kenny Pickett. The best comparison I heard for Mac was Chad Pennington. And Chad Pennington was plenty good. Chad Pennington, I believe, won the AFC East with two different teams that weren't the Patriots during that era, you know? So, like, you know, Chad Pennington, I think, has a chance to be a pretty damn good quarterback. Mac Jones has a chance to be a pretty good quarterback, like, on the level of a Chad Pennington.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough to pay the guy at the top of the market? I don't know. I mean, especially based on the way the Patriots have operated over the years. So, like, I think we're going to see, like, things stabilize around him with Bill O'Brien in there. I still think their tackle situation has a chance to be a very, very real problem. I also think their defense is going to be really, really good. So they may not need to ask the world out of their offense, and maybe they can sort of play that old school game that Belichick played, you know, back in 2001 with a team he had back then. So I think we're going to come out of this year saying, yeah, you know, Mac Jones has a chance to be in that Chad Pennington, Kirk Cousins level. He's plenty good, you know, but are you going to feel comfortable paying him what Mahomes or Hurts got, or what Burrow or Herbert is going to get? I think that that's going to be an open question at the end of the year.
Last question for you. You wrote a lot, probably the best piece about Rodgers and the Jets. Here's my question. How did the Jets view Aaron Rodgers 2022 last year? Because he's banged up a little bit, missing throws, especially downfield. I felt that, and again, having not talked to LaFleur since the beginning of last season, I felt like they got better when they realized that Rodgers wasn't MVP level. And they stopped. I think that they were calling plays like fourth down, high leverage plays based on Aaron Rodgers playing at an MVP level, and they weren't working. I look at the Jets game, the Commanders game, where felt like the game was there and the plays just weren't happening. And that's not to say that Aaron Rodgers has lost it, but I'm just saying there were, whether mm-hmm. through injury, through age, whatever, there was just a couple of plays where I was just like, I don't know about this. And he's going to be so much better than Zach Wilson. The floor is obviously going to be raised. But what are the Jets think they're getting from a realistic standpoint?
They think they're getting a different player than the Packers got last year because of the level of engagement. We've seen this mm-hmm. before, you know, mm-hmm. We've seen the fire lit under asses before, and you look at it like generally, like at this level, and this is above the Russell Wilson level, at this level of quarterback, like sometimes we look at these as wild swings, they've routinely worked. Kansas City got to the AFC Championship game for the first time in a generation when Joe Montana went there, right? Brett Favre goes to Minnesota. They were damn close to the Super Bowl, you know, losing in that Bounty Gate game in New Orleans. Peyton Manning goes to Denver. They go to two Super Bowls, win one. Tom Brady goes to Tampa. They win a Super Bowl. So, like, these have routinely worked, and I think part of what the Jets are banking on is the history of that. I mean, you're going to get a re-engaged player, and they've already seen it. I think a lot of Packers people would tell you this. And remember, Robert Saleh and Matt LaFleur are really good friends. So, you know, I think mm-hmm. Saleh has some insight. And they didn't talk about it during the lead up to the trade, but has some insight to some of the frustrations that existed in the Packers organization. Like the Packers, you know, when they offloaded Devontae Adams and they decide we're going to rely on some rookies here, and they bring in Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, who proved to be really solid, promising players by the end of the year. Like, they feel like if Rodgers had been around in April and May and June, it would have made a difference. And maybe part of the reason why you didn't see as much from those guys until later in the season was because he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Jets are getting a guy who was there in May and June, who showed up for absolutely everything, who is now like dead set on proving to the Packers, I've got something left. And, you know, so I think that they feel like they're getting a different version of Rodgers than the Packers got last year because they're getting a re-engaged Rodgers. And, you know, we'll see how it works out. But, you know, the history tells us not to doubt Rodgers in this situation because, you know, we saw what it meant for the Bucs for Brady to go mm-hmm. there, for the Broncos for Manning to go there, for the Vikings for Favre to go there, and for the Chiefs for Montana to go there. These things generally work. And so, like, I think the early signs are good. Now, mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, he is physically what he was. All that different stuff remains to be seen. But the level of engagement, which I think they feel like was the difference in Rodgers last year to maybe the couple of years previous to that, they feel like they've got that level of engagement that the Packers weren't getting.
I also just don't think you need much. And then the confidence builds on itself because the roster, the defense was so good last year. Salah took care of his side of the ball. Offensive coordinator is going to be better. So I'm in.
Yeah. One other thing too, I think is like, remember, like they were 7-4 with like really rough quarterback play. Right. And if you're Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, like I remember thinking this, like, this is why the Packers had all the leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have a choice. Like, who else gets a get out of jail free card after striking out on the second overall pick at quarterback the way that they did? Who? Mm-hmm. Like, no one, right? Like, Zach Wilson, after 2 years, has been, I mean, like, I don't know if he's like a Brandon Whedon level failure, but like, it's not good, you know? And normally that sort of thing gets people fired. And so, like, the fact that, you know, you can prove that the rest of your roster is as good as you're saying it is by inserting a Hall of Fame quarterback, I think is an incredible opportunity like that the Jets had to take, that Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh absolutely had to take.
Agree. You heard it here from Burt Breer. The Jets are back. Thanks for coming on Sony's Day, buddy.
That's right.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.